This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Deliver Podcast. We are so pumped for this episode. We've got Gary V here. Gary's an author, investor, entrepreneur. You can read all about it. We mentioned a little bit about it in the intro. He's also an avid Jets fan. Want to just get started. I mean, we're obviously going to show this in a few weeks, but Sunday, first opening day for the NFL. Big moment for the Jets. What are you thinking about Zach Wilson and your chances?
You know, we're so fresh off the Sam Darnold situation where, you know, Vayner Sports, an agency I own with my brother AJ, were in the final three for Sam. So we recruited him in his home. Like, my final pitch to him was, Sam, if I could have you join Vayner Sports and change the trajectory of our company, because we're a young company and getting you would be a big hit, and you go to Cleveland with the first pick, or you don't go with us and you go to the Jets at three, I would pick the latter. And his parents laughed and all this. And I was in the green room because that year Josh Jackson out of Iowa was a projected first round pick. So we were in the green room when he got drafted. I literally hugged Sam's mom, and she whispered in my ears, I knew Sam needed to be with you. 4 minutes after Sam Darnold was drafted by the New York Jets, Sam had his like first dinner in New York with me. Like, he's a real friend. I texted Sam a week ago and just said 15-1, you know, like, so I love the kid so much because of all that. And it did not work out, obviously, in New York football wise. I haven't allowed myself to go there with Zach the same way.
Yeah.
On the flip side, and with you starting this question, obviously you like football. It's probably hit your radar that some of the hype from Romo and Brewski and others, like, he's getting real hype, and he looked real fun in preseason. Oh,
he's good.
You know, it would make so much sense to me that it took me being reserved and not buying in for it to actually work out. And so I'm excited about him. The Jets are incredibly young. They're unfortunately a little hurt. We lost two major free agents that we signed in the offseason with Lawson out for the year and Davis, the linebacker, out for 2 months. Literally the back seven defenders, five of them are like incredibly inexperienced and late draft picks.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned about this Sunday and the season in general. But the reality is, if Saleh and Zach are right, which there's plenty of hope around those two things, it could be really great for a while. So I'll be cheering and nervous and excited in a big way.
Well, had to get your thoughts on that. I know it's really exciting team right now and super excited for the season. But anyway, on to our day jobs.
Yes.
Wanted to talk a little bit about, obviously, e-commerce. You were early to the space. You're obviously a huge, huge influencer in this space. We have a ton of e-commerce founders who use Deliver or follow our content, follow your content. So I wanted to just kind of get into the mind of Gary Vee to say, okay, if you were starting an e-commerce brand from scratch today, what product or category would you launch in? Would you be looking at like supplements? Would it be shoes?
That's a great question.
Sports apparel, and why? And what do you think also would you stay away from?
Yeah, I have two very different answers.
Yeah.
Very different. I would either pick something I am religious about, like the Jets, like like collecting bowls, like wine. I would, and this is the answer to everybody, what do you like love so much that 15 hours a day selling it is like a hobby, not like a job? Or pure math. If your hobby is the game, being an entrepreneur, being a DTC or omni-channel retailer, then you just run hardcore math and figure out what's the highest margin item that has the biggest white space, and you just go completely unemotional. And if you're selling sunflower seeds or socks, or you know, what is that arb? Because what's light, and you can win this. You know, I did e-commerce in '96. I did it in alcohol, impossible.
Yeah.
And my product was heavy as shit.
Yeah.
Right. And the margins were atrocious. I still now that I've become educated, like, I'm not even sure how I pulled off everything I pulled off because nothing was going my way. I think that I think those are the actual two answers for everybody's listening. Do you love it so much that you actually will it to success and it's a hobby while it's a job? Or did you run the quant so hardcore, white space, high margin, lightweight, conducive to social? I would also probably factor in arbitrage. So many people that are listening are either the beneficiaries of or quite aware of the golden era of Facebook and Instagram, CAC LTV life. Sure. And I think something that is TikTok in conducive would also be a huge strategy for me, because the organic brand building and the ad arbitrage at scale on TikTok is the next scaled branding, marketing, sales arb. And so I'd probably think very hard and heavy of kind of a 15 to 28 year old product as well. I like candy a lot. I think there's a big play in candy still out there. So those are some hot takes.
And that kind of leads to the second question. You know, how would you get the word out? Let's say you go, you know, for our Gary V candy company, we raise $1 million, you know, let's say 30, 40% of that you're investing in the people, investing in the product, right? You know, the other 60% you get to invest in marketing. How are you deciding, you know, should I put a dollar in Facebook? Should I put a dollar in Instagram? Or do I put a dollar in the influencer state? Try to do something more guerrilla marketing?
Everybody who's listening knows all the, you know, typical maneuvers. Let me talk about some things that might be an arb. One, the first thing I would think about is thinking about being a media company, not a advertiser. So much to my origin that the world got to know me. What the world didn't know me from 98 to 2003, in that 5-year period, I was, and even going back further, I was first mover on the AdWords. I was very knowledgeable about the wine space. So whether it was Mark Squire's bulletin board or Dr. Vino's blog, I was a very good ad buyer on digital. Math, right? Quant, qual. You know, qual or gray or brand came later, but where the world got to know me was Wine Library TV. And that was me doing a YouTube show about wine that led to so much awareness that all my ads outperformed anything I'd ever done before. And there was organic sales. So the first thing I would do, whether it's a candy company or a sock company, is I would build a ownable media channel. I mean, I love what you're doing right now. You're a B2B play and you're doing the behavior that I want people to do. So a podcast, a show, so that not only is that building some awareness and brand, but you can also take content from the episodes and use it as ads.
Yeah.
So the first move I would do is I would start the candy hour, where we review all candies or talk about candy culture, interview cool people eating candy or reviewing candy, right? So that's probably the most off-speed pitch that I could do for everybody who's listening, because I think everybody understands the math and the art required to be a great social media arbitrage retailer with your ad money. I think most people listening go too far on math and don't bet enough on gray and brand.
Yeah.
And I think influencers are an incredibly good arbitrage. I think Twitch channels, I think now, to be very frank, I would consider launching an NFT that is actually in the smart contract, a subscription to the product. I think that would be an incredible catalyst.
And so I want to talk about the brand piece. And you mentioned TikTok a good amount there. There was a crazy article that came out on BBC earlier this week, saying that now the TikTok engagement has now surpassed YouTube engagement in terms of hours watched, hours consumed per user in the US and in the UK. It's a really interesting
per user.
Medium.
Makes sense.
It's a really interesting medium.
I mean, think
medium.
About it, right? Real quick. Yeah, let me just jump in on that and then finish your question. Yeah. Per hour per user makes sense, because YouTube is still not mobile native.
That's true. That's true.
And TikTok is, and we spend so much time on our phone, you know, and so that makes sense to me. Keep going.
But if you think about the TikTok medium, you're not spending, you know, 10 minutes on long form TikTok content. I mean, it's probably it averages sub 10 seconds, 15 seconds. You know, we're gonna have TikTok speak at our conference in a few weeks. They'll probably publish what the number is, but you know, you look at YouTube, it's going to be much more long form content. And that's obviously a lot better for a brand to get their message out.
I don't know about that. I don't know if it's better. I think it's different. And I think it's a game of
and. Tell me how it's different. So how would you leverage this type of mobile, really ephemeral, really quick soundbite type content to build a brand?
The same way that I would act differently when I was 19 years old at my girlfriend's parents' house versus the party we went out to afterwards. And what I mean by that is I would respect the room, right? The reason most brands fail is creatively, not media-wise, because that's easy, it's math. Creatively, they don't respect the room. They don't make TikTok native content. They try to impose their will on it, or they're like an awkward, you know, person in the room, right? So like you go to a hot Manhattan club, the 57-year-old that's still trying to do it, you know, just feels creepy. Or even like Dazed and Confused, right? Like the sophomore, you know, the sophomore in college coming back to a high school party, there's a little cynicism, even though he might have crushed it 3 years ago at that high school. A lot of people don't know what native TikTok content is. How would I do it? I would make TikToks. How would I do YouTube? Yeah. I would make YouTubes, right? Mr. Beast on YouTube is YouTube, right? Charlie D'Amelio on TikTok, that's TikTok. So I think every brand here needs to figure that out. And the reality is that's an art. And boy, oh boy, do a lot of people on this call not want art to prevail. But art matters. It's why Purple Mattress is a different company than Casper. They bet on art more than Casper did. And I think a lot of people's greatest rationale, reasoning, and for not succeeding, that are, if you're listening to this podcast, you're the type of person that I want to bet on every day of the week. The rationale and reasoning to why many that listen to this will fail is their obsession with art, excuse me, their obsession with math, and their underestimation of art.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. When you get to, let's say, you know, you're building this brand and it's this really cool, really compelling brand, like a Purple Mattress. How do you stay cool? How do you not become that 57-year-old in a hot Manhattan club?
Actions, right? I'm the coolest I've ever been because I'm so native to where youth plays.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what every brand has to do, right? The way you do it is by being authentic. I got lucky. I'm authentically a little bit ridiculous and childish, right? Which makes me comfortable in my own skin, which lets me talk about shit that actually resonates to that demo. But for example, when I do LinkedIn, I am less naturally corporate, but I'm definitely contextual to LinkedIn in a different way than I am on TikTok. And so a brand needs to know the flavor. And by the way, on the record, as somebody who spends a lot of time in LA and New York, there's 57-year-olds at the club and hot events that actually pull it off. They're just inherently comfortable and authentic. Yeah. And I think when you force it, you lose. And I think the way a lot of brands here need to think about it is you need to hire a creative that's comfortable with it and let her or him interpret your brand in it instead of micromanaging it. So many people on this call would have won on Instagram or Facebook and are going to lose on TikTok because they're trying deploying a Instagram, Facebook reality into TikTok. This is all happening why iOS updates everyone's retargeting capability. There's so much going on in the ecosystem right now. So, you know, to me, building brand matters. So many of my friends made fun of me by not being best in class math arb over the last 7 or 8 years. But when they've seen $100 million worth of VFriends sell, 40 on the initial primary, 50 actually based on the Ethereum price at the time, and another 60 million in secondary sales that I get a royalty of over the last 120 days, call it $110 million in sales in 120 days, a lot of them have figured out what I was actually up to, which is when you have brand, you build trust. When you build trust, you convert better in new opportunities. When you are petrified to lose your brand, you actually deliver. So now I have this, you know, what I would call noose around my neck to make sure that VFriends becomes Pokemon or Disney or Marvel, because yes, my original buyers have made a fortune, but right now, I'm gonna literally, while I'm talking to you, look at the last purchase. Let's look at it. And here's a little refresh. The latest purchase on VFriends happened 32 minutes ago. It's a likable leopard in the rare category. So that was 1 of 8 with a brown background instead of the core, 1 of 20 with a white background. The person paid 20 Ethereum, which means they paid $69,000. Literally 32 minutes ago, a human being bought a likable leopard for $69,000. Do you know how much fear, Michael, I have to deliver on that investment? That person believes that I have the capability of building a Power Rangers, G.I. Joe, Smurfs, Disney-like intellectual property because they're buying it not only for the 3-year access to VCon, my conference, but for the long-term collectability. I won't let that person down, which will then build more trust. And like, that's how you build. Way too many people. This is actually a very profound combo, in my opinion, for the people listening. Let there be no confusion. 80%, and that is the number I'm going to peg, of the people listening right now are in the business of transactional mentality. The way they think about everything they do is CAC and LTV. The way they run their business is based on a VC giving them more capital in the next round. 80% of the energy on this call that I subconsciously feel in my tummy is transactional, while all the action for real winning is built on brand and long-term behavior. You need the transactional because you need sales. And I lived that life, right? When I was building Wine Library, we paid our bills. My family lived on like that store. There were no other options. There was no college degree. There was no getting a job. This was it. So I have a lot of empathy for everybody who's listening. I also cared about sales, but I knew I would one day leave my dad's business. I didn't want it to completely fall apart because obviously there was such a big delta between the $4 million it was doing when I got there and the $65 million it was doing after. And I wanted to make sure it was sustainable for my dad. So brand became the most important thing. A lot of people who are listening, Michael, to this demo need to be honest with themselves. Are they raising and building for quick financial wins? Which then I'm empathetic to. If you're looking to raise a Series C and take some money off the table and have a win without having a full win, I have to respect that you're going to be transactional.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to build something substantial, you've got to play long. You look at Zucks and Bezos, they always play long. It's why they're the only two stocks I ever really cared about.
Yeah.
And I think for that, you've got to care about our long-term brand. And that's what I want to, I'm really hopeful with my energy on this call, on this podcast, to get one person that is completely shit on brand, is a pure math kid, pure VC centric, pure transactional, pure that side, to at least even open up the curiosity of like, hey, what's Gary talking about? I don't think he's full of shit. He's got, you know, even if I don't love him or I don't think he's the best, clearly something's worked for him. What is this thing he's talking about? Because again, I bring up Purple and Casper. In a world where Casper was East Coast, I was rooting for them. A lot of my friends were early. I kept saying, I'm like, what they're doing over there in Utah is better. This is better. And I think it's, you know, as they're public companies now and we've seen how the market looks at it, there's something to that.
What are some examples of that? I think conceptually it makes sense, but I think
Purple would make a $65,000 video that had a chance of doing zero.
Yeah.
Casper never considered that.
And is it, what are some of the other ways to engage your customers? Now, it's obviously creating videos, but it's also, like, I think you have a way of engaging your audience, right? And bringing them in.
Scaling the unscalable, right? Replying to every comment, DMing everybody back. Like, these things that people don't think about, customer service, why I wrote the thank you economy after Crush It in 2011. Like, these intangibles matter. The modern DTC CEO has become uncomfortably one-dimensional. I secretly am thrilled with the iOS update, not because I want bad things for people, but because I'm hopeful a lot of kids are going to get motivated to round out their Swiss Army knife. Everybody decided they were a genius on one arbitrage on one major platform with good timing. I saw that show. It was called AdWords. I wrote it. I watched other people ride it. I know what it looks like. I get it. What I like about TikTok is it's going to be different. It's going to be brand / arb.
It has to be.
It has to be. So, you know, I think. There's creative risks. I mean, it starts with religion. It starts with, hey, of that 60% you were talking about earlier, I'm taking 12% of that. And I'm going to do things that I intuitively believe are just good for customers. A good video, a surprise and delight, a good sponsorship festival, a good educational track, a good customer service team. And you know this, everybody subconsciously or consciously takes that 60 cents and tries to squeeze the living shit out of it mathematically.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think what was really interesting, you mentioned like the Beast. I watched one of his game show like I think earlier this week, it was got 22 million views in one day. I'm like, okay, what is this? And so
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It is just the most engaging game show I've ever seen. Like, he brings his audience in and he's cutting deals with them, and he like develops a relationship with them. And I can see for this next game show, he's probably going to have a whole other group of audience members. He's going to continue to grow and grow his user base.
He also takes all his YouTube revenue and pours it back into the next video.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, like, the stuff he does is insane. Mr. Beast wants to make the greatest YouTube videos of all time, and then he happens to sell $1 trillion worth of burgers.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's an extreme all the way to the left.
Yeah.
To the right is 80% of the audience listening, and I think I sit somewhere in that middle. And I believe that middle is a more sustainable game in the long term and has the potential to create $1 billion outcomes instead of acqui-hires that made you look good, but you had to do it because your funnel ran out.
Yeah. And what do you think? So there was a really interesting article. Mentioned two companies. It mentioned, I believe it was Warby Parker and Allbirds IPOing, and it was in Forbes, and they were talking about how, you know, their CPA is plateaued, and, you know, the next wave of growth is going to be tricky. What would be some of the things, if you were advising them at Vayner, like, to really help and try to build that level of engagement with their audience, right?
Become a publisher, not an advertiser. So back to what I said.
Yeah.
Allbirds should absolutely have a show based on travel, comfort, exploring alternatives, because they were such a big alternative. Maybe they want to go into sports. I don't know what they're thinking about. Warby needs to think about, they can go very heady and make it about vision, right? So they can do very, like, you know, they could go very up there, or they could go more practical into fast fashion or cool or modern. Or number two, I would tell everybody who's listening, including those two companies, there's so much more to still milk out of Facebook and Instagram. But it's the creative, not the ad media arbitrage.
One piece that's interesting, I mentioned, we talked about this with Michelle in an earlier episode. Buy on Instagram, buy on Facebook. You know, now it looks like TikTok may be exploring with buy on TikTok. What are your thoughts on that? You know, do you think, you know, historically, these discovery channels have not really been able to gain traction having the transaction on where someone discovers the product. Do you think that could be the next, you know, the next wave? Do you think that could open up a lot of opportunity? Do you think, you know what, it's just a discovery platform, you should treat it that way, and you should really focus just on the organic story building?
I think it's both. Okay. I think it's both, and I think the economics are too important to the platforms for not to be both. I mean, why wouldn't the platforms want to be the toll booth and make money?
Yeah.
Right? So I think the—
But is that a decision for the platform to make? Isn't that the consumer decision in the end?
The consumer has spoken. It happens all day long in China. It happens a lot more than people realize. I would argue that the American-centric social media platforms have done an incredibly poor job of making it native.
Mm-hmm. And so you think over time, buy on Facebook, buy on Instagram will become pretty core elements of any strategy.
Or TikTok will do a better job and take its Asian DNA, where that happens all day long, and do a better job with it. Or as Instagram starts to feel older, as TikTok is such a unique creative platform, the next Instagram is being built by two kids right now in Kansas City, comes out with shopping DNA up front and becomes the winner of 2027.
Yeah,
but the macro behavior is clear. Humans hate friction. People live in consuming in feeds. This is very effective in other parts of the world. Humans are consistent in macro behavior. This has been more of Facebook doing a poor job with it, in my opinion.
And how do you think about—
And Facebook Inc. Because Instagram should have fucking crushed. Instagram should have fucking died. No, no. I would argue, when I say I wanted to do the Facebook Inc. clarity, Instagram missed the boat. There is no other word. Like, Instagram was incredibly positioned to dominate shop and feed. I just feel like they were always half pregnant.
Yeah, well, they just published. I just got the update yesterday morning. Now shop is now pretty core to the experience, but it's taken some time. It'll be interesting to see, though, how it drives adoption, you know, shop on Instagram. But it's, I mean, brand new. It has, they've been testing over the past, but like 3 years, but
it should do well. It should
think
it
would. You'd think it would. And how do you think about from a brand building perspective offline? So how do you think about, okay, let's say we're building a brand, we're building the Gary V Candy Company. We have a billion views on TikTok. It's going well and organic. How do you think about, okay, we should go and start stores, you know, create
stores is hold off as long as possible.
I think
there's a reason that a lot of dictators have lost wars in the last 800 years. And it's usually predicated on fighting on too many fronts. And I believe that back to the Casper and Purple conversation, that's another example. And I think stores can be great, but let there be no confusion. That's having a second child. And for anybody who has two, like I do, one is different than two. And I think people prematurely pressured by VCs that want them to go public, SPAC or sell, open that front way too soon. I think retail's there for you. It's great. I love retail. My dad owns a retail wine shop. I think it's the right play for many people, whether it's strategic and having 8 iconic stores around the world or having 18 in an area. There's a lot of ways to play it. I do think that the longer you can wait, the more you can establish your brand. It's a different game. Most DTC brands are so math arbitrage. Getting in-store traffic and location, it's just a different DNA. And so I'm not against it. But I think pop-up shops, strategic things at cultural events like Rolling Loud or Super Bowl, there's a lot of other, you know, or depending on your brand, local farming markets, store within store, you know, what Toys R Us is doing now with Macy's.
I think
there's some real store within store opportunities. Just being a little more creative than just let's hire a head of real estate, let's open up another store in San Francisco, LA, New York. I think there's something better to be done.
Yeah, makes sense. I want to be respectful of your time. So if there's one last question, I know you've given a lot of advice already to e-commerce brand founders. What would you say is the number one piece of advice for them to walk away with out of this episode?
Brand is the variable. But I'm going to add a couple of more things. Sustainable e-commerce. Sustainability from an environmental standpoint, though I'm pro that. I mean, things like, how much thought do you think about the packaging? Do you write thank you letters? Do you call and surprise people? Do you just do things that aren't cookie cutter? Given who I am and who I've been as an investor and entrepreneur, I just see a lot of companies, and boy, oh boy, are they the same. I went through a 3-year period where 400 startups that sold products said the same thing, which was, Gary, you're going to buy an umbrella and I'm going to donate an umbrella to a kid that needs it in Seattle. Yeah. You're going to buy, right? And then it's this, and then it's Facebook Arb, and then it's, you know, it's like anything you can do that feels natural to you that nobody else is doing is almost likely going to be the reason you win.
Yeah.
And so really I would say curiosity, creativity, like stop being a fucking robot.
Yeah. So like customer obsession, community building, things of that nature.
Yeah. Like put every customer into a Discord and then live in the Discord. That's a new e-commerce strategy. And innovation, right? Like launch 10,000 PFP NFTs that are also subscriptions. And now you have 10,000 paying customers because they're making a dividend and a value prop off the trading of the other asset they've got, which is the PFP. So they're just like, be creative. As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people, you know, it's so funny, people that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness. I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away, which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing review reads, "The push I needed. Gary has given me the push I needed to start putting myself out there on social media. If you aren't on social media, you aren't relevant." Thank you so much for that kind review. And to anybody else listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.